This week's episode of Still Entitled is made possible with support from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Do you think it's okay to drive stoned? The truth is, your reaction time slows way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. So stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Well, good morning.
Hello.
Hey, everyone.
Hello, you wonderful nerds. How's everybody doing? It's
pretty
been a
good.
Hot minute.
Pretty, yeah. I know we actually did not have a podcast last week. Apologies.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Out there. So well, there are quite a few things to catch up on.
You guys went to the Silicon Valley Comic Con.
Wow, has it been since then, since we've talked?
I haven't seen you since Comic
Con. Wow,
yeah.
That
since
was great.
Then. That's right.
Yeah,
I met Arnold Schwarzenegger there.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he huge?
He's a big guy. He said, I like your lean look. Keep it up.
You know, he was the presidential advisor on physical fitness for most of my childhood.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
He is very funny in person.
I can imagine.
As you could imagine, he's got a good sense of humor.
For a Republican, he seems okay.
I chose the honorific governor to address him.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I said,
okay.
Good morning, governor. How are you?
I'm really curious what he, like, in all his interactions.
Yeah, I'm totally curious,
Arnold,
too.
Mr. Schwarzenegger.
Well, if you're watching Arnold, then let us know.
Yeah, he was there because there was a big Terminator reunion at Silicon Valley Comic Con. Robert Patrick was there, Lionel Hamilton, mm-hmm. Ed Furlong. The first time that cast.
I really saw Eddie Furlong
together.
In the green room.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did, totally.
All right, okay. I know it's like maybe uncouth to talk about this stuff, but in the green room, so many awesome people. I was really in awe of Ensign Mount, who's maybe not the most well-known actor, but he played Captain Pike in Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And he also played Black Bolt in the short-lived Inhumans show. And I thought they could not have casted a better person.
He's a terrific actor, and he was a super sweet guy.
We spent
a little while chatting with him over there in the corner.
I heard from friends that Jason Momoa left a trail of swooning people in his wake everywhere he went.
That's what he does even on television.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But you did. You were there for, you didn't incognito?
I did. I did a Star-Lord incognito. And this was a hasty incognito. It was about 3 weeks ago that we were like, whoa! We're back from D.C. and Silicon Valley is like just around the corner. So I scrambled, and for a mad scramble, I mean, this is the luxury of having this shop and these amazing people working with me. But Mel and Jen and Kate Sabaker came in, and we put in like a full probably all four of us for like 6 days.
You guys were working on it every time I came in.
We were burning on it for a solid week and a half. And the costume came out way better than I thought it was going to. I mean, it's a beautiful rendition of Volume 1 Star-Lord from the opening scene.
First of all, Volume 1 Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of like Infinity War Star-Lords, mm-hmm. a short jacket. You like the long jacket.
I had managed to, the Star-Lord costume is what I guess I'd call a slow burn costume. It wasn't one that I was driven to make right away. But I, going through the RPF, and I have to post over to the RPF and ask who sold me this coat, because I went back through my DMs and I couldn't find where I got this coat. But this coat came up. I did enough cursory research on it to realize it was highly accurate, and I hadn't seen a lot of really accurate long Volume 1 coats. So I grabbed it.
You'd been working, you got the coat, it was a while ago.
Yeah, maybe 2 or 3 years ago or something, even more.
Yeah.
And then I gathered a couple of other parts and pieces. And then it turned out my friend Joe, who goes by Joe Atresh on the RPF, had been monstrously, delightfully obsessed with it and supplied me with a bunch of 3D drawings that he had done to use for my mask and my guns and my rocket controllers. And all of that came out great.
Cool.
Had some friends print them up. Carbon 3D did a little printing for me, too. I'm so happy with how that costume came out. So,
huge team effort. You didn't feel like you had to do everything, but at the same time, while you could have done like 3D printing on the Walkman, you chose to do styrene build.
Well,
you wanted
I thought that was a really fun one day build, and we haven't put that up yet.
Yeah, no,
so when we put that up, the thing I like about it is a lot of people look at that build and they're like, ah, the $400 Walkman. And there are a lot of people are making resin ones that they sell on eBay and even Amazon for like $20. It's a really easy, great, high reward build. By the way, We made a little, I think, DXF of the graphic.
Of the decal sheet.
Of the decal sheet.
Oh, cool.
That says Sony Walkman for the Cricut cutter. And maybe we can post that DXF.
I'm sure we can find a way. Because, when the build video goes up, for sure.
Because this is one of those ones where cutting out nice, crisp chrome letters just made the thing, made your whole eye just goes, that's a real thing.
Well, yeah. It was interesting because I assume that wasn't a $400 Walkman before the movie came out, probably.
No, it was probably a $100 Walkman. Yeah, Walkmans were, I bought one for my wife as a 10-year anniversary present.
Mm-hmm.
I actually made a mixtape.
Aw.
And I burned it onto a cassette, and I bought a Walkman, and I gave it to her and said, this is a time machine.
Recorded it on a cassette. That's really cool.
Running... Original Walkman, yeah, they weren't $400, but they're about $100. Yeah.
Okay, it was fantastic. I thought your dance was really good.
I didn't. I actually watched the video and I was like, I really should have committed more to that dancing.
Well, in the moment, it's like with every cosplay, you feel
necessary. You do.
Also, maybe it's appropriate for Star-Lord. You feel more awesome than you actually.
I should have committed more. I wanted to go farther. I wanted more dancing. I should have done a couple of twirls. That's all I'm thinking.
To play Star-Lord, you need a certain level of complete lack of self-reflection.
Exactly. And that's very difficult for me to do.
It's hard for any normal human being to do.
I watched that and I was like, I wish my dancing was a little more over the top. But the fan... I got found instantly. My I didn't realize
hair.
That it's like how much of your forehead is totally visible. It was pretty easy to spot me.
Well, you know, smaller.
Impressively, people are being blown away by the fact that you bolted yourself in that. I mean, you were bolted.
Oh yes, that is what the first helmet. I've literally had to screw me into the helmet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Two bolts.
There's no way to
take it off fast
without.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Oh man, that's uncomfortable.
I guess I could have overcome the tensile strength of the sintered nylon that made the helmet, but that would have been ugly scene.
Destroyed the helmet. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's good thing you don't get claustrophobic.
Hey, speaking of that, we saw Lou Ferrigno at the con.
Man, I'm going to go ahead and say, like, one of the first things as a child I was really terrified of was the Lou Ferrigno Incredible Hulk.
Oh, really?
Because I thought, as a four-year-old watching that on TV, I thought, oh, if you get too angry... You're just going to turn green and start beating people up.
Oh,
anybody
nice.
Will. So sorry.
Can I
Lou.
Say Lou Ferrigno looks great?
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks fabulous. He's. I mean, I'm not sure how old he is, but he looks 20 years younger than that.
He keeps popping up. He popped up in cameos for one of the Hulks. Was the Ed Norton one?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think he did.
Or was it the
Eric Bana one? Some Hulk cameo.
Might have been the Eric Bana one. I don't know. He looked good.
Yeah.
Anything
he
else?
He was in that movie. He was a whole plot point in that movie with Paul Rudd and
I Love You,
Siegel.
Man.
I Love You,
that's
Man.
It. They're trying
to sell his house. Jones. Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Stop calling me Hulk.
I do want to give a couple of shout outs at Silicon Valley Comic Con. Got a chance to walk through the Artist Alley.
Yeah.
And Artist Alley, I think for a con like this size, is the best place where artists have small tables, and you can find all sorts of diverse art. There was someone there doing Miyazaki inspired art, but set in San Francisco, like Catbus running through
Golden
Gate Bridge. And we bought a T-shirt from him. There was a Tested fan she paints animals in cosplay, so like corgis and owls.
Oh, that's so good!
Stuff.
This is
Diana.
The one that did me as a panda dressed as.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. And then I was looking for kits and stuff, and I found one guy who day job is a 3D modeler working for like Hasbro or some toy company, and just started doing his own line of tiny, like Warhammer style miniatures.
Oh, okay. Like 16th scale or something? 64th scale?
Yeah, real small, and they're all wax sculpted and then
hand
cast.
Wow.
And I bought a few of those.
Like Lost Wax love those. Sculpting?
That's awesome.
That's rad.
I love Silicon Valley Con. It is a delightful, it's lovely that it's homegrown, but I also the fan interactions just feel more and more like a long-term friendship. You know?
I had intended to come this year and was sad that I had to cancel, but next year I'll be there. It sounds like it's a really good time.
It was fabulous.
And we ran into last year, Mike and Shelley, this couple who cosplayed together. They did a Totoro that you repaired last year, and she was a dark side. And this year they unveiled a man spider, so not Spider-Man, but a man spider.
Oh, I saw the picture of that. Yeah.
Where it's, Peter Parker turning into a giant spider with big spider claws, with PVC pipe. And it turns out that the fur of the man spider is repurposed Totoro.
Oh my God! They took apart Totoro.
Took apart.
They skinned Totoro.
The worst thing I've ever heard.
And then put it over a bodysuit, over a harness, and then stretch. You know, one of those like nylon or spandex costumes you can get.
Yeah.
That perfectly fit over, and tore holes in that, so the fur pops out. And then did their own sculpt and hair punching for the mask.
I'm just
gorgeous.
Really disconcerted by the idea of somebody using a skin Totoro to make a Cronenberg Scott Spider-Man.
Yes.
That's awful.
Yeah.
That's absolutely really good. That's the best.
Really good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I think we've all finally seen Spider-Man Far
From
Home.
Yeah, I watched Far From Home this weekend. This last week we were in a secret location.
Ooh.
And I watched it in the hotel.
So before we talk about Spider-Man,
yeah,
people should go see Booksmart. It's not in theaters anymore. It's out on demand, I think, now.
I'm dying to see it.
It is super duper good.
Can't wait. Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, we'll watch it tonight.
Well, yeah, talk about it in the future.
Oh, yeah. This is Olivia Wilde's film, a coming of age, two teenage girls.
Yeah.
Often people were talking about it like super bad for girls.
It's not. It is. I mean, I would see why you could.
Cursorily.
If you were going to be reductive, that would be a good way to describe the movie.
Welcome to the internet.
But it's very worth watching. It's very
good.
Sweet.
I can't wait. The trailer made me super excited. I just wasn't able to get out to see it in theaters. Sorry.
It's very real and painful in a way that I remember being like, you know.
When you were 17-year-old girl.
When I was a 17-year-old girl.
Overachieving in high school.
Yes. I was not overachieving in high school.
I was overachieving, and I was fucking insufferable, I'm sure. Spider-Man Far... Speaking of insufferable, I thought Spider-Man Far From Home was amazing.
I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I loved watching Jake Gyllenhaal and realizing... and knowing that he insisted on a real physical IRL costume.
Yeah.
They offered him a digital costume.
Oh.
And he was like, no, you gotta... I want to wear something. I want something that glows. I want the thing.
Yeah.
So... Can we make this like a semi-spoiler cast? Because I do want to talk spoilers at some point.
Yeah,
let's do the normal thing where we talk about it a little bit and we warn people about spoilers. Because there are some big spoilers.
Yeah, well, spoilers for Endgame, right? This movie, of course, happens in the wake of Endgame. It kind of is an epilogue to the Infinity Saga, the 24th film in MCU.
And they address some of the issues of Endgame, post-Endgame.
They
allied well more issues than they actually.
Oh my God! I do not envy the screenwriters and the filmmakers who have to make films in the wake of Endgame, because if you even think about the logistics what happens if half the world's population suddenly reappears 5 years later,
how do you integrate them?
Yeah,
yeah.
Where do they live? Do we just set up
food? Do we have enough food?
Yeah.
For them,
there's a whole host of problems.
Or are there people who like pretended to disappear?
That was my favorite.
So sure,
right? And never disappeared and didn't age and created new lives. I mean, the only way to really approach it is through comedy, which is how it opens and which is the way they do it. Right? They introduce the idea of the blip, the people coming back from the snap, and you know Aunt May has that throwaway line how she popped up and
to remind me of her throwaway line?
She says...
I went back to my apartment.
The new family living there thought she was like...
Grandmother thought I was a mistress, kids thought I was a home invader or something.
Oh, I forgot about that.
My favorite is when they do this in a really good... In the first 5 minutes of the movie, where the school, the school video news program that happens at the start of school every day.
I thought that was a great way to start it.
It was a lovely bit of exposition, and the shot of the marching band blipping back in while the basketball team is playing is just, it's very good.
And also the production value of that daily school news thing where they pull from Getty Images with the Getty logo there and promo art from the Avengers was perfect. Low res art, very highly pixelated.
Yeah.
Yeah. That rang true.
I remember we had a morning radio station on the PA that two students did, and it was exactly that annoying.
We did. I was in the.
People who wanted to be DJs.
Uh-huh. We all had friends. AV club.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was AV club.
Me too.
Yeah.
Behind the camera, or in front of camera.
A little bit of both.
Oh,
everybody had to do everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Yep. Sorry. We haven't gotten to spoilers.
I know.
One thing I accidentally saw it three times because I went with my alone and with my wife and my daughter all separately, which not three times is too many for Far From Home. But the thing that I loved is that they did the prototypical, hey, we're going on a trip to Europe thing, where every time they did an establishing shot in a new location, they had the prototypical establishing shot for that. Like in Venice, they're riding in a gondola.
Right.
In Holland, they're in a field of tulips. In England, they're in front of the Tower Bridge.
Right. In, I forgot.
In Amsterdam, Amsterdam.
It was a little bit road trippy.
They were all stoned.
Yeah, probably.
Everyone was super nice.
Yeah, they were on a bridge, and everybody right. was, it was
in Holland. That was the best when he's in. Well, he pops in Holland, and he's with the other footballers, and they're just like the nicest folks because everyone's super nice. Well, look up on your cell phone.
Yeah,
no problem. Here you go.
He's like, where are you? And it's some you know. Yeah, he's like, can you just say it into the phone? It was all like the good European movie road trip tropes jammed into a Spider-Man movie, which I really appreciated.
I did think that Homecoming did a better job of feeling like a teen, like a John Hughes movie or like a classic 80s coming of age movie.
Right. I agree. Well, I concur.
Homecoming in it is about asking a girl out on a date.
Yeah, the whole movie.
And then the whole movie. Yeah.
And the big twist in Homecoming, it's too late. We can spoil it.
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton being the father.
He's Batman.
Best idea ever. The feeling that projecting the feeling that a young boy has to meet the father of his date, that feeling also meant combining with being the arch-villain
was the
greatest conceit.
Well, and the realization happening, it's so good. That scene is it's right up there with the,
Tom Holland is amazing.
He's really good.
He's my favorite Spider-Man, hands down. And I'm a early Tobey Maguire adopter. I loved the Sam Raimi 1 and 2 Spider-Man films. And Tom Holland is just, I think, the most proto-perfect Spider-Man.
Before we continue with this week's episode, I want to let you know that Still Entitled is also made possible this week with support from World of Warcraft Classic. That's right. Get ready to return to an era lost to legend because World of Warcraft Classic is available now. Coming just in time for the game's 15th anniversary, World of Warcraft Classic invites players to return to the world of Azeroth, just as it was during its earliest days. This faithful, authentic recreation captures the danger, excitement, and glory of the original game and relive the timeless adventures that defined World of Warcraft's legacy. You can fight for the Horde or the Alliance in an ongoing struggle between South Shore and Terran Mill, then gear up to take on the dragons of Blackwing Lair as more of the original game's legendary content opens over time. There's so much more to discover and explore. WoW Classic is included with your regular World of Warcraft subscription at no additional charge, so you can switch between the original experience and the latest content as you see fit. World of Warcraft Classic is available to play right now. Just head over to wowclassic.com/stilluntitled to learn all about it and get ready to relive the legend. Once again, that's wowclassic, wowclassic.com/stilluntitled. Now back to the conversation.
So do we want to talk about spoilers?
Yeah, let's go right in. There are many spoilers to talk about.
The first spoiler, which is Jake Gyllenhaal, the realization that Jake Gyllenhaal is pulling a con, is really heartbreaking.
I mean,
it's heartbreaking twice. One, because you realize that he has fooled him. Because the moment he hands him over, I was like, well, that was really quick there, Spider-Man. And then he hands it over, and then Jake Gyllenhaal turns to the group and is like, get this stupid costume off me. And it's insult to injury. It's the con, and then there's the fact that he has no respect for his opponent.
Oh, well, I don't know that. I didn't feel like he had no respect for his opponent. I felt like he was just kind of a sociopath.
Yeah. 6'1", potato, potato.
But you wanted it to be true. The mentorship, the hole that was in Peter Parker's life when Tony died, you wanted that fun. You felt like there was a genuine affinity there.
They're sitting on the roof. They're talking about life and girls and Tony Stark.
And I think that's the success of the film, because it's hard to go into this film when they say Mysterio is the other character to not do a quick Wikipedia search and read that Mysterio is a villain in the comics.
Well,
and so they do a good job of trying to subvert at least that expectation initially.
And to be honest, that scene where they're talking on the roof is one of those... here's what Marvel gets so right is here's a kid in a superhero suit sitting on a corner of a roof, and a guy named Mysterio is landing next to him, and all you're paying attention to is the character dialogue.
Well, and that's amazing.
Perfect.
Well, and the thing that they do, the thing that they've done with Spider-Man really well in both the MCU and the Sony films is that, I mean, I guess they're both MCU, in the Tom Holland era, mm-hmm. is that they've made it really clear that he is aware of his limits as Spider-Man. Like he has the choice at the end of Homecoming to become an Avenger and be like the universe's Spider-Man. He's like, I want to be your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I'm not ready for this yet. I want to go be a high school kid.
The Washington Monument was the tallest he'd ever climbed. He was more about 5-story buildings than 100-story buildings.
Yeah. Like there's not even that moment from Spider-Verse where Miles Morales takes the leap of faith and you know falls into the city from the 40-story building.
Yeah.
And this movie continues to reinforce that, but this movie is about that struggle of him feeling like he needs to fill the void that was left by Tony Stark and also find the father figure that Tony Stark, that he lost when Tony Stark dies.
And also I think the desire to keep it small is right. It's from some trauma, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's pretty clearly part of the character is, His sense of fortitude is that he needs to keep it small and he needs to still somehow be 16. That's a tremendous amount of self-awareness for a kid in the middle of adolescence who also happens to be an Avenger.
And to the credit of the Marvel Studios and the writers and the filmmakers, they can communicate all that without having to show Ben Parker's Uncle Ben's death.
Yep.
And without having to say the great power, great
responsibility. Let's run this one more time.
They also do a huge shout out to how great Zendaya is.
She's astounding. Like the scene on the bridge when he reveals that he's Spider-Man and she jumps ahead and it's like, you're Spider-Man, right? And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm that wasn't what I was going to tell you.
But then the vulnerability they both have when they lie to each other about, is that why you were following me?
Yeah.
And then that again is the heart of it, is the teenage relationship that everyone can relate to.
I like the fact that, and I'm not sure because I don't read a lot of online discussion about this, but is there discussion about the fact that she's clearly a little spectrum-y? That her character is a little spectrum-y?
I don't think so.
I think
that the character is slightly on the spectrum. I think it's what makes her, that gives her that slightly flat delivery.
She does a lot of face acting. Like there's a lot of expressiveness.
Yeah.
It's the thing, watching the movie three times, I'm like, oh, wow, she's doing a lot with her eyes in this bit. And it's clearly, like, I agree. Now that you say that, I see it, but I hadn't thought about it.
So that's an interesting thing that, like, maybe he doesn't see that she's more like him than he realizes.
Mm.
But she's fantastic in both movies. She's very compelling and very real. And they don't just make her a cardboard cutout at all.
She was really served well by the first movie, not realizing that she's MJ until the very end of the film. And her kind of you think she's like the female sidekick, deadpan, comic relief character, and then you're like, oh wait, I missed something important here. The thing that I love is him figuring out the Edith bit. Like, the Edith is a really lovely MacGuffin for this movie because it actually gives him way too much power.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's an amazing convention, and I found it really thrilling. I was like, oh my God, I got to get a pair of those sunglasses.
Yeah, I figured you were already working on it.
They were saying that those sunglasses, which are the sunglasses or the glasses that Robert Downey Jr. wears in like the previous films, mm-hmm. right, the big ones, they only look that way because Robert Downey Jr. is the only person who could pull those off as Iron Man, as a prop choice. Like, the actors pick their hairstyle, pick their props, and the glasses, and he could pick for the Tony Stark character. That's the one. No one could pull it off, and that's why they look so goofy.
They're awesome.
Which work for the AR story mechanic.
So there's a couple. I think that the scene that was the CG scene where Spider-Man fights Mysterio, and he realizes
in Berlin, and it's very trippy,
and he gets hit by the train.
Yes.
Yeah, is one of my favorite like we've seen a lot of those kind of dream sequence fighty things where like maybe it's CG, maybe it's real, we don't know. And they did such a good job keeping it grounded so you could actually follow the action. And then you don't know, like the switch-o-change-o on Nick Fury four times in that movie is astounding. Like he comes up, he confesses to Nick Fury. He's like, "Here's what I told." And he's like, "Oh, well, that's unfortunate." And then, wham, the train is just such a hard hit every single time.
Well, what they did was they did a good job keeping you confused as to what was ground and what was wall. And in the same way that he was confused, he's basically shrouded in illusion. And so, for someone who doesn't have his Peter tingle, you know, for most of the film, can't navigate through the world, right?
The look on his face every time that got spoken was so delightful.
So, but the thing about that sequence, the Mysterio fight, is they could have just done a bunch of quick cuts, so you had no idea what was going on with the fight, and they didn't. They kept the through line through the fight and actually kept you ungrounded.
You were trying to create a sense of what the real space was.
Exactly.
At the same time as he was blindfolded, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. What I also liked was that, you know, with the Mysterio reveal, right? One of the best parts about the comics, whenever comics try to make like a superhero real, they just add more support cast, right? Iron Man, the realistic version of Iron Man has like a team of 100 technicians. It helps them put him on. And this is what they did for the villain, realistic version of how a villain works. Well, he has a whole support team that he directs. He's a director. And I love that him going back to the steaming of the cape. Right, that's the vanity of that. That bit was so funny.
Well, that and the whole idea of his actual super villain costume being a 3D motion capture suit.
Yeah, what's wrong with my hand? Yeah, very, very. And so to tie up this coming of age discussion, I forgot. So this is a slightly tangential, but it's germane. Yesterday, I drove Thing 2 to the airport to go to college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Speaking of coming of age.
That's a big day.
The nest is empty.
The nest is empty. I went downstairs and fumigated their entire floor.
No.
Time to turn it into a sewing room.
Oh, this is a big shout out to the Bissell spot remover little vacuum cleaner man.
Unsubscribe.
Wow. Did you have to put on some black light?
No, it wasn't that bad. But driving back from the airport, I did a double duty. I put the dogs in the car so I could take them to the dog park on my way back from the airport, and like I drop him off, give him a big hug. He's a big strapping young lad. He was like 2 inches taller than me, and give him this big hug and put him on the plane. And I'm driving back, and Guardians is on, and I'm like, how can I try to explain? Yeah, totally. I might have gotten a little weepy.
I love so. We'll talk. I guess we'll talk about the Sony MCU stuff in a minute, maybe or not. But the thing that I'm most bummed about with that is that potentially we lose Happy Hogan in the Spider-Verse.
That would kill me. That would kill me if we lost Happy and Aunt May, because I love that pairing.
Well, Aunt May, we get.
No, I know, but the Happy Aunt May.
Yeah, plot line. Surprise.
It was just
surprise.
A summer fling.
But like the surprise, Happy is the father figure, is the like the sequence in the plane above Holland when Happy is like, look, dude, you're in charge, but I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Was so sweet. At the same time as Happy balancing out his like, I work with Spider-Man, not for Spider-Man.
And this is one of those ones where Jon Favreau just makes this minor, what would in under almost every other circumstances be a cameo minor character.
Yeah.
And puts enough into it, both as a director and an actor, that it brings this whole new dimension.
He does in Homecoming, too. There's a whole thing where he's in the insecurity of Favreau, even though he is the best friend and the right-hand guy for Tony Stark. He's like, he wanted to be head of security or wanted to be in like equipment management.
It's password.
Right? yeah.
But like Favreau is... It's amazing because all of this is this thing that Favreau started 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Like all of this spun out of one movie, basically.
Right.
And
let's see how this goes.
Yeah.
And you can tell when he talks about it on interviews and when he does a chef show, how delighted he is just to be a player in this. He doesn't need to be an architect. He doesn't need to be, you know, directing Iron Man.
Well, I think that Favreau is never, ever at all removed from being a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. It's just everything he does is infused with the feeling of I can't believe I get to do this, and then delivers times five.
Well, and I think that's why Iron Man landed the way it did. And I think that's why Iron Man 2 is you know, problems with script aside, is still entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think I mean, I think because he came at it from a place of a fan, it colors the whole thing, and it set the right tone
completely
for everything that came after that.
Yeah, he hit this perfect tonal balance for a superhero film. Yeah, just a stunning. All right, my hat is off to Favreau.
Yeah, John Favreau.
Exactly.
You're okay.
and of course, you know,
gosh darn it, people like you.
The big news from last week.
Oh, do we have to talk about this?
I think I think it's worth talking about in the sense that there's a week that's passed now, and people have, you know,
Sony and Marvel are having trouble figuring out their deals so that they can both make crap tons of money making Spider-Man movies that are good.
I mean, look, Sony made a Spider-Man movie that is, I think, my favorite Spider-Man movie ever.
Spider-Verse is in the... So we were talking about this before the podcast. There's definitely a film festival to be done of how did a studio let a movie this great just happen?
I think somebody... Yeah. I think they just sacked enough executives as they were going.
It was so... Spider-Verse is so singular and such a unique and perfect vision. I'm so happy it exists.
It's like The Matrix.
And that's the thing. I think you had an incredible creative team of Phil Lord, Chris Miller first into the Spider-Verse. They were giving a lot of creative freedom. And I think... That's a reason to be optimistic. The strength of Spider-Man isn't in that he's in the MCU, isn't in that he's a part of Infinity War and Endgame. That's gravy.
However, the contrast between the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies and the Tom Holland is really significant. I mean, I love Andrew Garfield as an actor, but Tom Holland just blows him out of the water.
There's a thing that Tom Holland
does.
But
he's still doing it. I mean, he's going to be Spider-Man. Yep. He's come out and said it may be different in terms of how it's connected, but they're making more Spider-Man films. The people in front of camera are presumably the same. As long as the creative team, is there, I'm excited for it.
I mean, the thing that Tom Holland brings Tom Holland seems like he's okay not being cool,
mm-hmm.
which is a thing that's important for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And like even Tobey Maguire was pretty cool in most of those movies.
Oh, did you Spider-Man 3?
Oh,
how cool he was.
No, I never saw Spider-Man.
Yeah. Oh, is that the one where he's walking
through
that thing? Yeah,
that's I like as a Spider-Man bit that works.
Yeah, it totally does.
But maybe I don't know if like Tobey Maguire is the man to. Anyway, I don't care about the cameos. I don't care about the crossover. I care about losing Happy because I feel like that father figure anchor. Is important for where Spider-Man the character is right now.
This is one where working in the entertainment industry where I get to hear sometimes the inside baseball of deals that fall through or got made. I know enough of these things to know that the story is rarely what you think the story is.
Oh, yeah.
And this one makes me sad that I don't know the actual story. I would love Marvel and Sony to solve their differences mm-hmm. and for their collaboration to be as fruitful in the future as it has been in the past.
I mean, they made $1 billion.
I know. There's plenty of money to go around. I don't know what the deal is. Yeah. But I
mean, Kevin Feige, I think he said it best. He said they knew they only had a finite time to do this.
Yeah.
And they're... And they'll always be happy with what they're able to do.
And so they should be.
Well, and Sony came out and said a couple of days ago that they completely understand Disney's lack of interest in putting someone whose time is as valuable as Feige's on a product that they don't own.
Right, right, right.
Which is fair.
Totally.
I'm disappointed. I'm sad. But, you know, the world still turns.
Is that what you're saying?
Look, if they put Lord Miller on the next Spider-Man, I'm okay with that. That seems like it'd be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is totally
true. And it really isn't the end of the world if Spider-Man's not in the next big Phase 4, Phase 5. There are so many characters.
They're going to space. They don't need Spider-Man in space. He's been to space already.
Bitch, you've been to space.
Yeah. Who here's been to space? So there you go.
I think that's a reasonable place to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's coming up on the site this week?
Well, we have a really cool. You put on a suit of armor.
Oh yeah.
Ooh.
Prop store.
There's an incredible suit of armor that Adam gets to put on.
Can I give it just a tiniest bit of kind of tease?
Yes.
Norm and I and Joey spent last week on the set of a thing which we can't talk about for I think like 10 months.
Something like that.
But when we do. Who boy, are you going to be excited that we were there and got the coverage that we did because we visited a really cool set and got to see some awesome, awesome stuff. That's all I'm going to say.
Incredibly Sorry, mysterious. As soon as I leave, you guys start doing cool stuff. That's fine. New Zealand, movie sets, whatever. I'm just, yeah, just if you need Sorry me, I'll be over well. Here.
And the Project Egress build is just about a week away, where it's being wrapped up. Smithsonian's doing some awesome stuff.
We've been
building ancillary material around it.
That's it. The delay for Project Egress posting that video has been that we're working hard on making sure that we have a structure that can highlight all of our collaborators. So Jen Schachter has been doing a tremendous amount of project management, making sure that when we launch, we have all that support. That's and so cool. I cannot wait for you to see this. These live builds, man, I'm so excited about.
Have people
them.
Started sending in their own doors? Pictures of their own doors?
We've had a couple of people that have their own doors in progress.
Okay.
But no, I haven't seen many in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And yeah. I'm curious.
You should send them in if you're working on
them. Yeah, absolutely. If you are working on your own hatch, whatever scale, send us some pictures.
So more live builds in the future, though?
Oh, God, yeah. This is a whole new kind of theater. It turns out that I have this one piece of institutional knowledge above most others I got from Mythbusters is the ability to design a project that I can really probably get done in front of a crowd by the end of that day.
It's very highly specific.
It's really probably.
I don't know what that'll do for me in any other circumstance. Yeah. I'm useless in an apocalypse with that skill, but...
That's a real niche market there, Adam. Congratulations.
It is, but there's a way in which, like, when you're in your own head trying to fit something together and you get it to go and you hear a crowd behind you go, oh, and you're like, ooh, it's like your own mental landscape being voiced by this Greek chorus around you.
There was a moment in that build when I was watching on the live stream when you were trying to get the window in, I think, and you just picked up the mallet and started working on it. And the audience gasped. And then when it went in, they were like, ooh. It's very good. It's very satisfying.
It is.
Yeah, and then there are so many other videos from that DC trip that are still rolling out, from visits to the Hazy Repair Center, seeing Alan Eustace's suit under incredible display, and also I think Close Encounters. You guys did something with that.
The mothership is there.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Such a beautiful model.
The way the restoration stuff works there is that video was really good. It was lovely.
And everyone there is having they are as excited as you want them to be about what they get to touch and fix.
So when I went to the Garber facility 25 years ago, probably, which is up in Maryland, which is where they do like the big, it's where they like restored the Enola Gay that kind of stuff. The people that were working there were a mix of like young people that were employees and like retirees that were volunteering time.
Yeah.
And just doing the kind of like the grunt work, like the small brushing and the taking stuff off and putting it back on and all that. And a lot of more ones that had been at that time had repaired those. What was it? A B-19, B-25? I can't remember. Anyway, World War II era bombers because they served and were the mechanics for World War II era bombers.
Oh my God.
It was so cool. So amazing. Cool.
The first time I saw the Flying Fortress and I saw the beautiful clear plastic gunner's ball on the underside, I saw one of those up close and I was like, oh my God, I understand another 30% of George Lucas's aesthetic.
How did they make
so many Star Wars ships exemplified by that
front
one
of the
ball?
Fighter.
Yeah.
How did they make those domes in 1940?
That is a good question. And I think they're actually polycarbonate and I'm not sure. I've never researched it, which is dumb of me
because
it's for researchable.
Like, isn't the polycarbonate, they had to be polycarbonate because that's how contact lenses were invented. This may be an apocryphal story, but the thing I always heard was a flyer had a shard of plastic in his eye,
and it didn't
irritate his eye from an impact on a canopy.
Oh.
Anyway,
I did not know that.
Let me know that that's wrong.
I did not know that.
This is rambled on. This is the longest quote ever.
This is
Norm's
not
getting
any.
Anxious.
All right, that's all right. And there is a new clip from Rise of the Skywalker.
No, God, right. I have to watch that.
I wish I hadn't watched it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, I had the opposite thinking. Well, maybe we'll discuss this off camera, but I think if it's the last thing you can watch, you should watch.
We have to end this podcast. We're going on.
Let's just do another one. Just roll right into the next one. Marvel movies ranked 1 to 25.
We'll see you next time.